Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Rain Marine Electronics.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle, streaming live on MyRequest.com. Don't forget about the venerable TheOutdoorLine.com with blogs, videos, podcasts, and so very, very much more. Good morning, Rob Ensley.
Morning, guys. How you doing? Looking good up there?
Doing good. Joey Pyburn. Here's Joey Pyburn. My videographer, Joey Pyburn, you see, who will now never leave the back part of that deck now that the new sounder is on. The bait table big screen.
The new Axiom Pro has hybrid touch. Ridiculous.
We actually get to spend some time together. We're rolling out to CQ in the morning, and so the three of us actually get to go wet a line. I cannot wait. At least by this time in a regular winter, we all would have been, you know, out together for a derby or something like that. But
we were already in the boat this morning, through gear and rods.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm looking forward to getting out and doing some fishing. And I know a lot of folks are interested in the forecast that just came out yesterday from WDFW. North of Falcon process has kicked into high gear or low gear or whatever. It's moving, whichever way it's going here. It's in gear. And so we reached out to Mark Iwasa, former Seattle Times reporter. Of course, he's a blogger with us here at the Outdoor Line. He follows the forecast every year. And he's going to jump on here at 6:25 with us and kind of go over some of the good news, bad news, and all the news surrounding the forecast here. There are some really, really bright spots, and there are some dark clouds hanging over this thing as well. But I think most people expected that. So Mark's going to jump on 6:25 and talk about the forecast some of the stuff that folks should really start planning for here this fall, because there's a few big ones coming. And then 7 o'clock, Mark Boardman, our good friend from Vortex Optics. Joe, you and I are going to go hunting with him here in 2 months, 7 days, and 14 minutes and 3 hours, whatever. Yeah, anyway, I got it mapped out. But we're going to go hunt with him, and we're going to hunt bear with Mark in May. I made that same trip with Mark a couple years ago up to Alaska. We just had an absolute blast, and we're happy, Joe, that you're coming along this time. And we're going to talk about that hunt a little bit, and then some of the other hunts that we've been on where we've used this stuff that we talk about, you know, the Fury binoculars, the tripods, our scopes, everything, all the stuff that
the spotters,
we use.
The gear that we use, man, all the Vortex stuff that we talk about.
Yeah.
Without that stuff, man, it makes hunting a lot tougher.
Well, and if you've never used binoculars on a tripod, you're missing
out. Well, Melly, we're still trying to get you to just use binoculars. Let's just lose the tripod.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
You know, but some of this stuff is fun. I mean, we were talking yesterday on the phone. It's like, let's just not talk about the product. Let's talk about all the stuff that we do out in the field. That's, you know, the product is just ancillary to what we're doing there. And there's some funny stuff that goes on. Like, Joe, you calling out the range on my deer last year, you know, as my deer's running off and I'm trying to get it ranged, and you're calling it out on the range finding binoculars. And so let's hold on to some of these stories till when Mark jumps on there. But there's some good stuff that goes along with all of our shenaniganry that we do out in the field. And of course, we got our Vortex Optics along for the ride there. And then 7:25, there's a big push right now to get us more opportunity on the water again. And Dave Shamp from Hatchery Wild jumped on a couple of weeks ago and pinged us about coming on the show and talking about what they've got going on, because there's been a huge reduction in hatchery plants across the Northwest, especially here in Washington. And these folks are looking to get us back some opportunity and get some of these hatcheries going again, retool the hatcheries, relaunch them in a better way. And he's got some interesting stuff to say. So 7:25, Dave Shamp's going to jump on here with us and talk about Hatchery Wild and what they got going on there. So we got some great guests lined
up. So, you know, right now it's politically expedient to go ahead and increase some hatchery places in areas that are going to be away from ESA Chinook concerns. And so, you know, last week we got the news of HSRG Hatchery Science Review Group going by the boards, which had to happen, man. It just absolutely had to happen. And we've already seen our hatchery plants bottom out like a couple years ago. And now we're going to see more Chinook production. We mentioned the Pacific Salmon Commission's initiative to put some 20 million additional Chinook smolts in the water. Commissioner Don McIsaac has an initiative of his own that is talking about adding the additional 50 million, 30 million in Puget Sound, another 20 on the coast. So we're going to see increasing hatchery output now from here on out. And even if it's just, you know, like I mentioned, the political expediency of prey availability for the southern resident killer whales, fine. I don't care. The fact of the matter is, you know, hatcheries are a mitigation for lost habitat, and government is not doing their job by not producing these fish. And all this, in my mind, there's just been a lot of scapegoating. So the cool thing about Hatchery Wild Coexist is it, to me, serves as a litmus test for any organization. If you see an organization not openly supporting Hatchery Wild Coexist, I tell you what, they're not an organization that deserves your support, in my opinion. Okay, so we're going to call some balls and strikes here in that segment. I'm really looking forward to that. But in the meanwhile, Robbo, you just absolutely laugh because we got the whole Roy Robinson Chevy RV Studios here papered in forecasts, and we got.
Oh, you I know, got them got, laying all over too. Oh, and I got my highlighter pen out, and I got little highlights on the next to each number, because this, I mean, it's dizzying to look at the numbers, but overall, let's say the coho run, and let's hold a lot of this for Mark when he jumps on.
Oh, absolutely.
Just a high flyover of some of it. I mean, we've got a pretty good pink run forecast for Puget Sound. It's not great, but it's enough to give us some opportunity in the Sound.
You're talking almost a million in the Skagit, you know. Over half a mil in the Snohomish system. You've got a decent number coming back to the Stilly of just over 50,000, and that's a fry based. Okay, the cool thing about pink forecasts are they are mostly out migrant fry trap counts, and so they're much more accurate in general. But Robbo, what I see here, and it, in my mind, I have a hard time reconciling the Oregon production index number on coho, which is a good indicator of how these salmonids did on the oceanic pasture, and some of these moderate to lower Chinook numbers. I mean, how can we have this many, you know, Chinook on the coast and coming back to the Columbia and not have our Puget Sound forecast reflect that same uptick given roughly the same amount of hatchery plants? You know, you can blame it on the blob, you can blame it on a couple other things.
Yeah, but you got to look at
I think all of these are very conservative.
Yeah, and you got to look at natural production, too. I mean, the Puget Sound numbers are not good at all. There's very few bright spots in Puget Sound. And, looking back to that spawning year, who knows? Maybe there were some environmental conditions that year that weren't conducive to good spawning conditions. I don't know.
Absolutely.
They don't look good. They don't look good at Puget Sound.
You're looking at three to...
just doing a high flyover.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. So you're looking at age three to five salt fish, okay?
Yeah.
And so now we are still... you know, getting it in the shorts from the blob of 2015, 2016, right? So, you know, that's still one of our issues and, you know, poor spawning success. But, yeah, we will leave most of that to Mark for sure and run through this. And he does just a great job. I will say that the actual meeting yesterday was almost like death by Zoom, okay? Because it was scheduled, slated as a six-hour Zoom meeting. And, yes, I sat through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I did. And the cool thing is, that the Zoom stuff makes it a little easier from a manpower staffing standpoint on WDFW because they don't have to travel to all these meetings.
Now. Yeah.
And it also, so that's good because there's been a lack of availability of people on the WDFW side to really get things done and get the modeling done. So I see that as a good thing. Furthermore, there was several hundred people on the call, and at the forecast meeting in Olympia, in that room, you know, in the natural resources building, you probably would have got 50, 60. Okay.
So it allows a lot more people to be
exactly.
involved.
Exactly. Yeah. And there was still almost 100 at the end of the meeting. And when Mark Balzell mentioned it in the middle of the afternoon. So getting this information out to everybody, I think, is absolutely key, and the manner that they're doing it right now is great. So, you know, if you got any questions about this, text us up, 710-710, powered by Yamaha Outboards, and we'll make sure we hit on your particular fishery and, you know, and you know, kind of crystal ball stuff as much as we can. Again, the forecasts are nothing more than the raw material by which our seasons are crafted, right? So there's a lot of work to do. Between WDFW and the co-managers, between now and when we see the pamphlet, no question about it. So, Robbo, what goes in to you getting ready for a full season up north? I know you're already in middle of prep. What goes in to getting that Duckworth out front ready after a winter of not much going on? Let's talk about spring commissioning, getting your stuff ready, and what we can kind of expect once we hit CQ. Give us 90 seconds. We'll be right back here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
From the shining shores of Puget Sound to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line. That's Joey Pyburn, Rob Ensley coming at us from Gig Harbor, Matt Nelson in our Seattle studios. Joey Pyburn and myself here in the Tulalip Roy Robinson Studios. And so there hasn't been as much to do this February as we have seen in the past. I mean, the opportunity-o-meter has not been exactly pegged there, Joey Pyburn.
No.
So, I mean, if we wouldn't have got to Rufus Woods and, you know, got to get out and go steelhead. I've been making good use of the time. And I, you know, getting that boat dialed in. If you're just pulling the tarp off of yours right now, or you haven't yet, Joey, what are some of the things that guys need to be thinking about with their ride that's been rotting in the backyard since Labor Day?
Oh man, batteries, yes. Electrical, all those, you know, all the wiring. You got to get in there and make sure all that green gunk is cleaned off of them.
The green monster.
Your motors, man. If you've just been letting your motor sit there all winter long and you haven't done anything with it, you got to get in there and you got to change the oil and you got to make sure your fuel is up to snuff. Water separators. I mean, boats are a full-time job. You got to make sure you are taking care of your boat. Hopefully you put it away right. You cleaned it out. You, you know, ran the fuel out of your kicker. You know, there's just... You let them sit, things go wrong.
Well, so, and Robbo, you're the let it sit king because you dropped yours off, you know, and went hunting just like immediately after the season. So at least you get to store the thing inside. But for years, you pulled a tarp over yours, didn't you? And left it outside.
I didn't tarp it. A tarp would never last in Southeast Alaska.
That's true.
That wouldn't even be there when I got back.
So
no, my boat. Listen, my boat just. I winterize it. It sits there in the shop. Luckily, it's in a heated shop. But this time of year for me is all about tackle and getting gear ready.
Yep.
And picking up the stuff that I know I'm not going to have in the summertime. I've been on the phone with Gibbs up in Canada. They got some cool new stuff. They have some new flashers. You know, flashers are supposed to imitate a salmon going through a school of bait, right? And your lure or your spoon or your hoochie behind it is the one that got knocked off and is flopping around behind it, and that's the one they eat. Well, so now they got some flashers that look like a fish. The Kingfisher 2 flashers, and I haven't used them yet. I know a few of the guys up in Canada have been using them. I've been talking to Trevor and Jason and a couple of the guys up there about them. But I'm going to use some of those this summer. So I got some of those coming to mess around with. Every year I try to plug in a couple new goofy little things that might be leading, cutting-edge kind of deals. And so I'm going to try those flashers called the Kingfisher 2 Phantom Series. They come in all the cool colors, but they're just shaped a little more like a fish than a flasher. So I'm going to give those a try. They've also got some cool swim baits for lingcod that I know will work in the Sound. And they're weighted up to like 5-6 ounces, so you can get them downtown. I think they even make them heavier than that. But they're just a cool little swim bait. One of them looks exactly like a herring. And we have a lot of big horse herring up there in the spring. And when we're fishing shallow for those lingcod, there's a lot of times we catch a lingcod, it's full of horse herring, you know. So got some of that stuff coming, of course, hooks and line and swivels and all that stuff as well. Corkscrew swivels are hard to come by. So I've been sniffing around, getting all that stuff going, ordering in. I run shock leaders and all my halibut gear. And I've always ran 200-pound test shock leaders, which work great. But I was talking to Tommy Donlin the other day, and he's like, he runs 300-pound test. And I'm like, that sounds better than 200. So I ordered a bunch of 300, you know?
Well,
and the cool thing about, hang on one second. The cool thing about the 300, and this is what I do too, is I not only jig with that stuff, but I've got a snap on there and a slider on it. So that when we switch over to bait, I just take the jig off the corkscrew swivel. And I spin my bait leader right on, and I snap my lead on. Now I got a full-on, it's almost like a tuna cord, but it's mono. And a lot of guys will pull the tuna cord, you know, pull their leaders off, their shock leaders off, and put on a tuna cord when they go to meat fishing for halibut. Well, I just switch it all over, and I'm ready to go. I'm not retying anything. So just some of the stuff I'm going through right now. Mine's all tackle-based right now. Of course, I just ordered an anchor system, an easy anchor system from those folks. I'm going to put on an Easy Anchor 5 with Dyneema on it with braid.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Quarter inch. It's, yeah. I mean, that stuff's spendy. Holy cow. I was she said, when I send you this, I want you to sit down. And when I send you this
make sure
this
you're bid, sitting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that stuff's expensive, but I think it's going to be super cool anchoring up in deep water with that quarter inch. Dyneema. Well, so
that's interesting.
So for a lot of guys here, for Puget Sound, you know, we're going to go fishing out at CQ, but a lot of guys probably aren't going to fish till June or July. And just like you said, Rob, there's a lot of stuff that's hard to find right now already.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
for guys, for your salmon season's probably going to be pretty short and sweet for Chinook in the Puget Sound. We're going to have a good opportunity, probably coho and some pink opportunity. But, dude, go get your spoons, your hoochies, your leader line, your hooks, your swivels, grab some extra downrigger balls, some extra snaps, all that stuff that you use that you're used to, like, I lost a downrigger ball, got to swing into Harbor Marine and grab one, or John's, or wherever, right?
They call me the peg burner at Harbor Marine because I see something I need. I mean, I just grab the whole peg.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, go get it now. Don't wait till May or June. Yeah. Go get all that stuff now while it's out there. Because it might not be there in July.
It won't be. And for instance, Silver Horde, they only make so many of those herring aid spoons. And that's their production run. Well, they've got big baskets of them at Sportco right now. And we were down there rifling through everything the other day and picking all the little ones out. And we sucked that thing about half dry the other day down there.
Yeah.
They also had 18-pound downrigger balls. I know Harbor Marine usually has a pretty good supply of those, but they've got those now at Sportco and Outdoor Emporium as well. And just go get that stuff picked over, because it's not going to be available here soon.
Maybe some extra cable for your downrigger.
Yeah,
just all those things that you go through. Like during the season, you burn stuff up.
I mean,
might want to grab a backup net while you can.
Well,
who knows? I mean, there might not be with that pink season coming. Trust me.
Yeah.
There's going to be a whole bunch of nets sucked up out there.
There's
going to be a bunch of new people on the water buying stuff that they haven't bought before. It's going to be tough to find stuff.
It is. And your point about, you know, our Chinook season, you know, being short and sweet, as it has been the last few years.
Sure, you want to make sure you're fishing the whole time. You're not running around looking for gear.
And so that's why, you know, I'm talking about all you guys with boats out there right now. Man, if there's something you're not sure of or you think you need to get this fixed right now, all the shops are pretty slow right now. But when we start going, man, they're going to be slammed, and you're going to be left on the beach. So, you know, don't be that guy. Okay, definitely. I tell you what, let's pop out of here for a quick break. We got all these forecasts. We barely even touched on them yet. Mark Uwasa was on this call, you know, and put a nice blog up on the Outdoor Line. Again, you got any questions, text us up, 710-710, powered by Yamaha Outboards. The salmon forecasts in gory detail coming up next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the BOMAC Tech Line. BOMAC has all the gear for all your techniques, and SMI shellfish gear is simply the best. BOMAC, we catch big fish.
Welcome to the Tech Line, presented by BOMAC. We're going to get hooked up with Mark Uwasa here in a minute, but, you know, every year it's like Steve Martin and the Jerk calling. Yeah. The new phone book is here. The new phone book is here, right? You know, so I just can't wait for the forecast to pop out. And so, and like any other year, they're kind of a mixed bag, right? So, and this year, you know, on the heels of the Oregon Production Index and with 1.7 coho, I was expecting a few more Chinook to be in Puget Sound, right? And so here to kind of walk us through it, the blog master himself, Mark Uwasa, joining us now. Good morning, Mark. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. Doing well, guys.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. So I'll just let you go. I kind of have, you know, my thoughts on the forecast overall. Let's get your view from 20,000 feet, and then we'll kind of dig into the details.
Sure, sounds good. Well, I mean, to start off, the big news from the meetings yesterday was the pink forecast. You got close to a little over 2.9 million pinks coming back to Puget Sound, and that compares to 2019 when we only saw 608,000, although the actual number was more like what the forecast is for this year. So that's a good sign for anglers this coming summer in the August and September time period from CQ all the way into, clear down into South Sound. There should be some pretty good fishing, and it sounded like from what the fishery managers were saying is that we're going to see a bonus catch limit. I think they're going to start off with a bonus catch of like 3 fish compared to, what we saw early on in the early, 2017 timeframe of a 4 fish bonus limit. So that's something that's really nice to see, a refreshing news, from all the bad news we've been hearing about salmon runs in the last, 5-6 years.
And also the coho runs in most of the marine areas in Puget Sound, too, are looking a little better, with the exception of Hood Canal. Most everything is at least trending upward on the coho front, isn't it, in Puget Sound, Mark?
Yes, that's really exciting. I mean, Puget Sound itself, we're seeing a return of about 614,000 this year. And, a lot of those are made up of hatchery fish, so... we're going to see it, and if folks recall what happens with these pink runs in the coho at the same time, they follow right in hot on their heels, these coho. And so, we should see an early return of these Puget Sound coho this year. So folks should be pretty excited about, having two good runs of fish coming back. And this goes all the way into the rivers too. The Snohomish is going to see a better run than it has. We're going to likely meet escapement, with a forecast of like 70,000 plus. And of those, I think about 60,000 are hatchery fish. And the goal for spawning escapement there is like 55,000. So, to see some bright news like that for fishing this coming late summer and fall, that's a good shot in the arm for anglers.
Yeah, and then on back to the pinks, almost 600,000 or something in the Snohomish. I keep hearing stuff bounced around that the Snohomish will probably see a pink season. What about the Skagit, though? I mean, the forecast on the Skagit's over 900,000 pinks in there. Have you heard much about
a million, too. Million
I mean,
pinks
come on. Skagit?
Yeah, have you heard much about the Skagit, buddy?
Yeah, when you're hitting close to 6 digits on those pinks, close to a million on those pinks up there and itself, and then you've got what another 80,000 of coho to the Skagit.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Geez, come
yeah.
on. We haven't seen something like that in a long time for that river. And so, I'm just kind of gushing right now. And we'll see. These are forecasts, right? We've got to kind of they're paper fish. But it's nice to see this. Very refreshing news for once.
Yeah, and then before we get to the coast, there's some really good stuff going on in the coast, Mark. But what about the Chinook runs in Puget Sound? That's the one dark cloud hanging over Puget Sound right now is the Chinook stuff.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and what you see there, because I don't see much good coming out of that myself. But what do you see, man?
Yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing issue for Puget Sound, especially for wild Chinook. And, we've got the ongoing constraints on wild stocks like, the Stillaguamish, Skagit, Snohomish. And the one that really stood out to me this year was Mid-Hood Canal. And I know, Tom, you're on the advisory group. I mean, when we're trying to squeeze out as many of those to save, and it costs us months of fishing time, it really hurts. So,
it's a fool's errand because the Mid-Hood Canal stock is, has been recognized as been extirpated and should not even be an ESA concern. And now you're looking at a forecast of 18. Now, I'm not talking 1,800 or 18,000.
18.
I'm talking 9 spawning pairs of fish, okay? So at that point, you either need to grab some excess stock from George Adams Hatchery or something on the Skokomish, which is a very, you know, in obviously in basin, and do some supplementation, or you write them off. The thing of it is, though, when you have so few in that stock, you do get some relief from a regulatory standpoint, Mark. I mean, if there's only 18 of these out there, the encounter rate on these is going to be really, really low. So, I'm a little more concerned that we just keep seeing the stilly wild fish just kind of putts around, and, you know, 325 is what the number is this year. So, you know, that's down a little bit from last year, but I expect those to kind of rebound too. But yeah, Mid-Hood Canal, definitely a concern, but, you know, again, we just got to see this come through the run model, and we'll just, you know, kind of get some early indications of what kind of Chinook opportunity we're going to have. But I'm looking at this, as you are, Mark, from a time on the water perspective, because of the coho and the pinks. We will get some Chinook opportunity. And one question I have for you, Mark, is during the conference call yesterday, during the Zoom call, there was talk by Mark Balzell, who's the Puget Sound Chinook manager, about carving out some winter opportunity and maybe catching a few less Chinook in the summertime. What did you make of that, and what's your opinion of that management strategy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we look at that option, I mean, as it is, our summer fisheries are pretty skinny. I think everyone is online about trying to create some more winter fishery. I mean, look, we're sitting on our butts right now, you know, and we should be out there fishing for some winter blackmouth, and it really hurts. I mean, to have, what, 18 days in January in Area 10? Come on, that's a joke. And so, you know, I think it's really hit the state about re-implementing some more of these winter blackmouth. But what's going to happen is, you know, the takeaway is we're going to lose something in the summer. That's what Mark said. And so, you know, we're going to have to kind of really look at this closely and see where we could, you know, kind of take the burden and put some more.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we could lose it. I'm not sure where we could lose another day in the summer. We only get like 6 days in the summer. So we'll trade like 3 hours. We'll trade 3 hours in July for 4 hours in the winter, maybe, or something.
Yeah, there's not enough time to trade. What are we going to trade days in the summer to get?
And here's
a few days in the winter.
Yeah.
It's like,
here's the other thing. And I've been asking, and Mark, I asked you about this yesterday too, is the Puget Sound Enhancement fee that we pay, the $10 fee, mm-hmm. Puget Sound Enhancement stamp, that was instituted to pay for the blackmouth program. They used to raise blackmouth and plant them in Puget Sound. Frank Haw devised a way to hold those things back and make them hang out in Puget Sound. I mean, it created one of the greatest fisheries ever in the Sound. I mean, the blackmouth fishing used to just be crazy here. And now, is that program gone? I mean, now we still pay the fee, but we don't have any blackmouth fishing. Can we get rid of that fee? I mean, and I've asked a few people about this, and nobody really knows the answer. And I'm going to keep asking questions on that.
It just kind of
bugs me.
They'll want us to continue to pay that fee, but we can get another fee and get that program back up and running, I bet.
And they need the money. Go, right? I mean, I think most of us are fine paying the fee as long as we get something in return. But
exactly.
But that's just a question that's been bugging me the last few years here. But let's move on so we don't turn this into
a big
coast. Bitch fest. But
let's get to the coast.
So we've got this massive coho run coming, headed for the Columbia. Also a really good run of Chinook headed that way. Something like just short of 600,000 Chinook headed for the Columbia. A couple of really good runs. The one speed bump on the coast, and I don't know if people understand how this works or not, but the Queets River coho are way down, the wild coho and the Queets, and that's one thing that we're going to have to manage around on the coast. I was talking to Dave Johnson over at Kitsap Marina yesterday, and he's like, it's going to affect the north coast fisheries, anything north of the Queets, and in fact, even down into Westport. Talk about that a little bit and where folks should be looking to fish to target some of those coho when they come back, Mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, what's going to be tough is trying to carve out those ocean fisheries with that, you know, that Queets number being down so much. I mean, I think they forecasted somewhere around the neck of like 3,500 wild coho there. And, you know, the escapement goal is like 45. So, I mean, people need to really understand. And I think they go, wow, you know, we're just, you know, that's not a lot of fish to try and save, but it is. It's a big number, and it really stands out. We've had that issue before, and we've managed to get seasons. So, you know, you know, in the big picture, I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll see some full seasons for the coast. We'll obviously see some bigger quotas. I mean, when you've got 1.7 million out in the ocean before they hit the Columbia, I mean, that's a whopping number of coho that the OPI put out. And you know, it's going to be something to really look at. And so I'm excited about that, you know, for all the Nia Bay down to Owako fisheries. We should see a lot better fishing. You know, the one thing that was talked about again was that, you know, there are going to be closures up at Nia Bay and La Push this year. So folks are going to have to live with what we did last year is, you know, fish out of CQ and to pursue some of these fish on the northern coastline.
Yep. That is 100% for sure. When did you hear that we wouldn't have access to La Push or Nia Bay, Mark? When did that drop?
I talked to Wendy Beagley a couple weeks ago, and she's the coastal salmon manager, and it sounded like that, you know, for the long term. And also I talked to the halibut biologist, because that's coming up soon here too. And I had that same question. So I asked them, and they said, you know, as of what they're saying right now is there's no movement there, and it's going to have to be one of these things where we've got to launch out of CQ to get to Nia Bay. So it looks like that's going to happen again.
Yeah, and in regards to these big forecasts too coming down the coast, all those coho, and talking to Dave Johnson yesterday, it's going to be best to target them down off Owako and down off the mouth of the Columbia or just south of Westport because of that Queets River run. It's going to kind of hamstring that fishery anyway a little bit out there. Now it sounds like we got no access to it anyway. So you might make plans if you're going to hit some of those coho, head to Westport and go south. And it's not a far run. You don't have to go too far, but there's going to be a lot of coho down there, especially if they aren't getting intercepted up north of there a whole lot. That fishery down off the mouth of Columbia is going to be completely stupid this summer if these coho show up and then with all the kings. It's going to be awesome, man. Yeah. Oh man, it's going to be epic. I'm excited for you guys
And last year at Buoy 10, remember, we only had 14 days, and I fished 13 of those, and we were expecting one number, and we got rewarded, and the number of Chinook that we got last year
is basically what we're forecasted for this year.
With a majority of those being the prized upriver brights,
and the coho are going to keep us fishing at Buoy 10.
They're
going to
keep us fishing.
I mean, we're going to get a full season,
and we're going to get that option of early in August. We're going to be able to go, you know, out over the bar, take a ride at North Head, and go fish, fish the beach outside of the Columbia River too. So there's a lot of great stuff coming this summer, and after a winter like this, and after all the crap we've had to put up with, Mark, I can't wait, buddy. I can't wait. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one other thing too, kind of hitting the rewind button too, is July. Oh my God, when I saw that Upper Columbia adult summer Chinook forecast for this year, I mean 77,600 fish. You know, that's the seventh highest return since 1980. So folks, you know, I mean, I went there last year and I got a chance to fish that Chelan Falls area for those June hogs. I mean, my son and I, we just had so much fun. And what's kind of funny, and I was talking to Rob about this yesterday, was that, you know, folks got to think about putting wheels under their boats, you know. I mean, I preached that to the, you know, to the choir for many years now. And places like that and Hanford Reach later on in late September. I mean, you know, guys like Austin who fish those things. I mean, I've had a chance to fish that now for 5 years in a row with him. And folks got to realize that, you know, there's other places, and to get stuck in this, you know, the ocean, you know, and Puget Sound and things, diversify yourself and kind of look at other things too, because there's a lot out there, like you said, Tom.
That's why I will never have a boat that I can't trailer.
Yeah, well, you're real close. You're getting pretty close.
Yeah. Actually, you do have a boat that you can't trailer. You need a trailer. But,
There's
some stuff to do, though. I mean,
there's opportunity, you know, just like what we did this winter, we had to travel to go fish.
We did.
And
exactly.
There's great opportunity out there. You're right, Mark. It's not just the Puget Sound or the coast. There's all kinds of stuff to do.
So I think, honestly, though, in the grand scheme of things, we got a text earlier. It's like, hey, listen, guys, we compare and contrast the salmon runs to when you guys first started doing the show. You know, and so now you're talking about 2003, 2002, right? And so, you know, overall the abundance is down a little bit. But, Mark, I tell you what, I see a bright future. I see years and years now of snowpacks upon snowpacks and good ocean survival and good spawning conditions. I see finally we pulled our head out of our you-know-what with regard to increasing hatchery production. And so, you know, we're gonna look back at years like this, thinking, okay, well, we made it through that, but we're still gonna get an opportunity. We still have an upswing on pinks, but I see an incredibly bright future for the middle of this decade, especially with regard to the effort to provide more prey availability for the southern resident killer whales. What's your take? What's your look this year and long term overall as a trend?
You know, and yeah, I think Tom, you hit that right. You know, right on the nail is that, you know, we you and I have even talked about that, and we've said that, you know, we get through these, you know, some of these lean times, and we're gonna see the recovery, and we talked about that, and the recovery is gonna start happening. I mean, look at all the snow we have up in the mountains right now. I mean, we got so much snow up there, and that's good news for some of these young fish that are in the river right now to when they get, you know, later on when this comes down into the rivers, it's going to be some nice cold water for them. And we're seeing the recovery out in the ocean. You know, there's, you know, the blob's gone, thank God. And, you know, we're seeing more of a trend of colder water out there. So, you know, that's been one of the big necessities of these fish is the better water conditions. And so I'm hopeful, and let's get out and let's go fishing pretty soon here.
Yeah, and all we need is the ocean to cut us a break and jack a few more fish in here that's on the forecast sheet. Forecasts can be low, you know. They're not always overshooting these.
Sure.
So we could be in for a heck of a summer. Mark Uwasa, outdoor line blogger extraordinaire. I sit with him on the Puget Sound Wreck Fish Advisory Board, and he does a heck of a lot, finger on his pulse of a lot. Mark Uwasa, thank you for your time today. We will we'll be in touch, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Mark.
Sounds good. You guys take care. Have a good weekend.
See you, buddy.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Coming up next, Raymarine Picks of the Week. CQ, 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 Blackmouth, CQ, Blackmouth, a whole lot more. We do got permission. We do have permission from somebody on the text store to make this an all Blackmouth show.
Yeah, no, I saw
so
that.
All Blackmouth. Raymarine Picks of the Week coming at you next. You're in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Welcome to the Outdoor Line Picks of the Week, presented by Raymarine Electronics. Don't just go fishing, go hunting underwater. Raymarine, simply superior.
Welcome to the Raymarine Big Splash Sales Event. Save up to $2,000 on new Raymarine and FLIR. Head over to raymarine.com. You can have a Visa prepaid card heading your way. $2,000.
And you could pick up a new Axiom Pro and mount it right to the bait table on the back of your boat so you don't have to turn your head and
we're never going to see
all the way up at the unit.
We're never going to see Joey's face on the boat again. His boat, his face is going to be on his rod and on that sounder, Robbo. And if you haven't already, pop over to the Outdoor Line's YouTube channel, and we popped that video on yesterday, just the install, and it's pretty cool that all you need to do is get a data cable and a power wire there, and that's it. That's all. You can expand another
display.
Yeah, it was
super fast, and then we were on the water and went out and tested her
marked,
out.
And marked fish and didn't put gear in the water. But putting gear in the water we will soon, Robbo. You have the floor. What are your Raymarine Picks of the Week, buddy?
Yeah, that's number one this week. Finally get to do a little blackmail fishing. Marine Area 5 out in CQ opens on Monday. Weather's laying down. You know, a couple of days ago, there was a 25-foot swell on the ocean, and it was not looking good. But now we got a little bit more of a south-southwest wind, and things are looking good at CQ, so I expect a lot of boats to be headed that way. Parking lot will be full. I know some guys that are sleeping in the back of their trucks and pitching tents and doing whatever they got to do out that way to catch some blackmouth. Folks are hungry to go fishing. It's mostly a herring show out there, a small herring drill. There's not many places to fish. We had Tony Floor on either last week or the week before talking about that fishery. Go back and check out that podcast if you've never fished there before. He laid it all right out and exactly where to fish there. It's mostly, you know, anything small herring looking yep. spoons, your Kingfisher lights, your Gibbs, your skinny G's. Gibbs is making a killer herring aid now as well that looks just awesome. Matches all the small herring that we have up there in that area. And your small baits too, your Orange Label herring in a hood, even your Red Label herring in a hood. Just make sure it's a small herring, got a kind of a herring profile to it. And of course, fishing near the bottom, 90 to 160 feet of water. Don't be surprised if you get completely mashed by a big halibut in there too. There's some really nice halibut in there this time of year. And I guarantee we'll see more than a few people hanging on for dear life as one of those things it ropes them, you know.
Just rot.
But that's what's going on.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's what's going on, and it'll only get better as that season goes on, as these 100%. Fish move out of the Sound and head out the Straits. So go ahead.
When you catch the halibut when you're blackmouth fishing, the initial raw when it pops off the downrigger, you're
yeah.
like,
yes, yeah, yeah.
For just for about 30 seconds until you get the rod in your hand, and you're like,
yeah. most of them go straight down, but straight, the ones yeah, that peel yeah. out, they line yeah. out. You're like, oh yeah, I got the 22 pound blackmouth on there, and yeah. then
it just yeah, stays anyway. Down. It just yeah,
you and then it's just a battle to get your gear back.
I think there's going to be a bunch of halibut in there because Trevor's Boyovsky yeah. over on the other side of the strait, he's been doing just fine on halibut. And I think it's going to be good for halibut. But anyway, we're there to catch blackmouth, and hopefully there's some fish there. Nobody really knows. So I guess we'll find out on Monday what's going on. But that's kind of front and center right now, at least for all the folks in Puget Sound. But steelhead fishing is also going on right now. There's been a lot of folks out steelhead fishing. I know the Skagit River system's been really busy here this last week on the last four-day opener. It's open Saturdays through Tuesdays through April 15th for catch and release steelhead fishing up there. No more beautiful place in the world either than fishing up on the Skagit River. I mean, it is ridiculous up there this time of year, especially as we get into early April. My goodness, the cottonwoods will be blooming, the grouse will be thumping, and there'll be some big thumper steelhead in there as well. So that's open. The coastal rivers are spitting out some steelhead. Forks area still. I mean, Mikey Z and Billy Meyer and the guys out there, Kratzer and Bob Ball and all those guys, they're finding some steelhead out there. It's not as easy as it used to be, but there's still some nice steelhead coming in. And also we got a little bit of action starting to pop up down on the Cowlitz River as well. They're yep, starting to get, see bit. A few fish turn up down there. So mm-hmm. that'll go on into April down there. In fact, probably the best time to be down there is in April when a lot of the guys are headed for the Columbia River to start looking for springers. Pressure backs off quite a bit on the Cowlitz, so it's a good little yep. good little program down there. East side, talked to Kane Brand at Heavy Hitter Guide Service yesterday. He's been down in that Tri-Cities area chasing walleye. Had no problem just loading up on walleye down there. He said that the problem with McNary and Tri-Cities and that area, the wind just howls down there. Remember, Joe, when we drove through there going deer hunting, when we went to Idaho, it yeah. was blowing like 35, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And he said that's the only thing you got to worry about. If you head down there, definitely got to have a bow mount trolling motor, and you're probably going to be using a combination of that and your kicker motor just to keep yourself
straight up, down.
But they just roped the walleye down there his last trip down there. He was going to head down again pretty quick, and so that was a good report. Of course, Rufus Woods is still going, Lake Roosevelt's still going, the Kokanee Bite on Lake Chelan is still cranking. There's a lot of stuff going over happening over on the east side that's really good. Once we get past this some of this snowy pass conditions, folks can start dragging their boats over there and get in on that stuff. Kaiser, John Kaiser's been fishing American Lake, catching rainbows out of there like crazy lately. And so they're stalking quite a few of the west side lakes right now. Jump on WDFW website and just see which one of your local lakes has received some plants and get on out there and try to catch some trout here. And it won't be long before guys will be out catching bass here on the west side as well, too. So
2 weeks from today is spring forward, and 3 weeks from today is the first day of spring. So I mean, we're making it through, gang.
February's driving us in the face.
Yeah, we're driving a stake in the heart of February this yeah. week, no question.
There's a bunch of guys who I know have been wanting to get to the east side, but the pass conditions just not allowed.
Tell me about it. I had to drive around Snoqualmie Pass. I couldn't tow that boat through last weekend. That was nice way to add 4 hours to a 5-hour drive to sure. Clarkston, man. That was a tough one. packed second hour. Our good friend Mark Boardman of Vortex Optics, what's new and what is not optional
for
2021?
We're going to talk all blackmouth with Mark Boardman. All blackmouth.
Yeah. Because Joey will be using his binoculars in the boat to find out what other people were using here next week. The Northwest Outdoor Report, and of course, the Duckworth Wildcraft Wheelhouse. Dave Shamp of HatcheryWildCoexist.com. Why hatchery fish are not the problem, and who is or who was the problem. That, Roy Robinson's Really Where. Jam-packed, chuckle-block, full hour two right here on the Outdoor Line. 710 ESPN, Seattle.